Welcome, everybody, to the Out of Chicago podcast. My name is Michael Novo, and I'm currently recording at the Out of Chicago conference here, summer, June. And if you're not here, then you are certainly missing out. I have with me today a very special guest, and his name is Tim Wallace. Tim is actually a commercial transport photographer, and he kind of specializes in the slightly higher end of the market, I guess we could say. Welcome to the show, Tim.
Hiya. How you doing?
Thanks for... I'm not too bad. I got enough sleep last night, so now I'm doing much better than yesterday when I was very tired. Thanks for taking the time. And by the way, if you're hearing some background noise, we are at the show. There's like 400 people running around here, so we're going to do the best that we can to make sure that you can hear us. Tim, so why you're on this podcast is because I sat in your workshop yesterday.
I
knew a little bit about you, but didn't really know what to expect until I sat in, and I was like absolutely wowed by everything that you showed us and that you talked about. I loved your teaching style, so really enjoyed the class. And then we actually photographed, and I just had to talk to you, like, where on earth did you get started? How are you doing? What it is that you do? And can you get me a Bugatti Veyron to borrow for a little while?
Slightly sort of colourful background. I started in photography, I guess, when I was 7 years old. My grandfather used to take loads of pictures as an amateur photographer. But the problem was that he didn't actually like processing them and printing them. So at the age of seven, we converted the garden shed, got me a stool and a pair of very large rubber gloves, and I started mixing chemicals and doing the whole processing and printing thing. So my first love and first passion was actually seeing prints develop in front of me. Grandmother wasn't too impressed because she thought if I fell into the developer that I would dissolve or something like that. But that's where the sort of passion started. From there, I spent about 10 years professionally printing. I ended up professionally printing. Used to print for some of the really big names around the world and get paid really handsomely for it. And I sort of progressed from printing to actually being out and doing... sort of documentary and press work. Started working for agencies. This is sort of the compressed version of my life.
Well, you have to go.
And
20 minutes.
And then everything was great. And then we had like a mini recession in the UK, and all the agencies were getting cut back. So I thought, right, I need a change of career. So I joined the Royal Marines because I thought that's going to be difficult. So it's up my street. So I joined the Marines.
So you go from printing to Marines.
I can see that.
It's a good resume. It's just a progression of resumes right there.
Yeah. So I went into the Marines, and I was there for 9 years. I came out of the Marines after suffering quite a bad accident, which saw me fall off a cliff in Norway. It's another story, but I spent a year in hospital.
And it was it 147
feet?
Yeah, I remember what you're saying.
It completely changed my perspective of life in the fact that I am a firm, honest believer that people don't tend to change until they're at the precipice of change. So a lot of people say, like, when you're close to death, your whole life flashes in front of your eyes. I've been there 3 times now in my life, and it doesn't. Every regret you ever have, everything you think you should have done but you never did, and you think, I wish I'd done that, that's what happened.
So, and I totally don't want to spend the entire show on this or anything like that, but that was kind of one of the things that struck me, is that you said during your workshop, I guess I could have just done this podcast without you. I'll just say everything that you said and what I thought of it, and then I'll give the response on that. But you said that it's not your entire life that flashes before your eyes or anything like that. What it ends up being is that all your regrets are passing by. And I thought that's interesting because I'm kind of in that scenario now where I used to be in the corporate world, and all of a sudden I got this job from a place that I used to be at, and they're like, will you come back and help us out with this? I'm like, maybe. But then I have a new media company that we're starting up, so it's like I'm at that like crossroads now myself. So you were saying that it's really the regrets that if only I could have and if only I should have.
Yeah, I just think I think everything since then. I mean, a lot of people say to me, like, wow, you've achieved a huge amount in a short space of time commercially for what you do, because I changed career obviously to this and formed my company 9 years ago, and you seem to be everywhere in the world and you're always busy, and everywhere we are you appear and things like this, and how the hell do you do all this? And it's simply that I have a passion to do it, and I just don't see the point in waiting for tomorrow.
Right.
Because out of that experience, if you want it, go for it. there is no such thing as luck. There's no such thing as destiny. It's just a series of choices. You're influenced by everything around you. So basically, there's no easy way to say this. If there's anything negative in my world, I just stick the finger up at it and I walk in the opposite direction. Life's too short. You could be under a bus tomorrow. You don't know. So crack on. Get on with it. If you want to do it, do it. Don't make an excuse. Otherwise, you're just going to end up in a job that you hate, working for a boss that you hate, going back to a box that's called a house and sitting there drinking beer, watching TV, watching some show where you're watching somebody else's dreams getting lived out. It's called entertainment. Get out of the box, do it, because you never know. So that's what I do. So, you know, you're going to be out of your comfort zone. And I suppose that's the key thing with me. When I started the business, it was like way out of my comfort zone. But you've got to do it. Out of your comfort zone is where you evolve and where you learn. So that's what I do. I mean, this is the first time in Chicago. Chicago's an interesting city. It's great.
You went for a jog to the southern direction of our city.
Let's move on. But life is for living, and we'll quickly just move on from that.
Just as a PSA, if you are attending that Chicago conference, jogging towards the south side at 4 in the morning, I would probably suggest a different trail.
You're putting a really good time on the way out. So that's interesting. But no, it's just that I grasp every opportunity I can. If there's negativity in my life, no matter what form it is, I just go in the other direction. I don't have time to entertain it. And I come to things like this, honestly, because I fundamentally believe that experience, memories, things that feed your soul, that's true wealth in life, not capital assets and money in the bank. And coming to this, to be honest with you, is not like a financial big thing for me, but it creates a lot of wealth because I make loads of friends when I'm here. I make friends, I change people, I inspire people. It maybe saves. I did a one-to-one this morning with a lady who wants to do something, and she's been trying to do it for ages, and it's been going wrong constantly, and she's just not getting anywhere. And the mistake is that through my experience and my eyes and what I've learned in the last 10 years, I can clearly see three things that she's doing wrong, which are stopping her. So I've talked to her about those. We've changed in those. And she's now left after that 1 hour with a completely new path. And she'll succeed. I know from experience she'll succeed because it's just her approach that's off because of the market that she's going for. So she is going to be affected, and it's great. It's a good result. So that is a positive thing. That's why I'm here.
What do you suggest for that? And this happens to me. I'm sure it happens to others as well. As I go to a conference, I remember when I first got into photography and I went to the 6-day, it was a group of 10 of us. And so you really are there and you're learning and you walk away and you're like, this is amazing and I'm inspired. And then you get home and, you know, the day-to-day life happens and you start to revert back to it. So how do you push through that? Like, she met with you now. If you were to have advice for her or to anybody else who's got this moment of inspiration, how do you take it and then run with it? Or is that just something that is in your...
You've got to be committed to do it. You've got to have enough passion and commitment to do it. In her case, she's got homework and she has to mail me shortly with where she is. I'm not letting go of it.
Okay. So you're holding her accountable too.
Yeah.
All right.
She's had an hour of my life. So
it's a long reach.
You know, but it'd be great. Yeah, it'll be great. But generally, yeah, if the thing is, it goes back to what I said a couple of minutes ago in a way. If you really haven't got the passion or commitment to do something, you'll make an excuse as a human being and you'll carry on making excuses every day. So you talk to somebody somewhere, you're having a coffee and you talk to somebody and they're like, oh, I hate my job. Have you applied for another job? Oh, no. Have you looked for another job? No. How long have you been in this job that you hate? 15 years. Jeez, it's your own fault, man. Get out. Right. Make an effort. Do you know what I mean?
Well, but I have kids, but I have this, but I have...
But I have everything
mortgage,
else.
But I have all
it's,
these...
It's like,
all these
it's like equipment, isn't it? It's like, you know, people, you know, the new cameras come out, the Mark III's come out, I need this camera. You don't. The camera's not going to make you take better images. Truly, it's not. It's like riding a bike. I could give you a stack of books this high on how to ride a bike. You've never seen a bike before. You're going to read those. After a year, you've read all the books. You're going to get on the bike. What's going to happen? You're going to fall off the bike.
Right.
But as photographers, so many people will sit in front of YouTube and things like that, watching videos of people riding bikes and buying books on bikes. And then they'll go to an event and they'll see that the red bike they were going to buy, there's a green bike. It's a shiny bike. It's a bigger bike. It looks like a faster bike. I'll buy that bike. I'll be able to ride better. You just need to forget all the shit and get on the bike. Seriously. Events like this can point you in the right direction. That's what these things are about, I think. Right. They're to inspire people, give people ideas. and regenerate their interest in it. If they're wailing, or even if they're in business and they're like, I've met a dead end, I've become unconsciously incompetent in this, or whatever, is to give people direction. But you can't get away from the fact that you need to get on the bike, ride the bike,
right.
Get on the bike and start pedaling. And then before, if you commit to that for long enough, before you know it, your eyes are closed, your hands are off the handlebars, and you're weighing down the road, wind in your hair.
Well, that just that's seems it. Irresponsible with your hands out and eyes closed. But
and then you get hit by a bus.
You should try. You know, what's funny is that I'm just getting into road cycling, a little bit of road racing now on the bicycle. And so I've been sitting and like watching these YouTube videos for hours and hours. Like, what is this? What is the proper form for that?
Yeah,
and then at some point, I remember that like 2 weeks ago, I was like, all right, I just got my new bike. I need to just, let's shut off the tablet here and go out for an actual ride and just enjoy it. Yeah. No, yeah. 100%. Yeah. It's the same thing with photography. You're not going to perfect it. And that's the thing that I encounter sometimes is people will say, you know, how did you make that image? I'm like, oh, well, I had this flashlight on me. And so I just shined it. And they're like, oh, that like $5 flashlight. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, wow. But I have this, you know, and then they pull out gargantuan gear. And it's like, I just what will make that end result for me? It's like, don't worry about everything else and just get whatever you need.
It's like digital. I mean, I have loads of, I've kept every camera that I've ever shot on, and my father's cameras and my grandfather's cameras. I have like 60 film cameras from old rollies to Hasselblad super wides to F2s and Fs that we used in the Vietnam War that I bought and things like that. And they're great. And I run film, but digital's great. Digital's what I do. I shoot in a Hasselblad H4 and H5 and all this. And it's great. The only bad thing with digital I find is actually the fact that it's got a rear screen.
Right.
Because as human nature says that we do a shot and then we check the rear screen.
Right. And then, you miss that moment sometimes.
We check the rear screen and it's like, oh yeah, the exposure looks okay and everything else. But we're so obsessed with checking the bloody rear screen that we're not looking at actually what's in front of us. You see, when you shoot film, the days of film, when I first started, you're constantly obsessed with looking through, looking at composition, cut, tone, texture, how light is affecting that and that. But now we sort of just get quick shot off, check the exposure, and then just like put another 300 shots through. You know, you're not focusing on what's in front of you so much, right. I think. So, I mean, I do classes sometimes. And what I actually do is I'll tape up people's rear screens and they're terrified.
That's what I do with my third shooters.
Jeez, they're terrified.
Yeah.
They can't do that. Wow, I can't see what I'm doing. Yeah, you can see what you're doing.
You've done it before.
You've got an exposure meter. You've got a brain in your head. You know what's in front of you. So actually slow down and think about it. And what people do is they slow right down and they start spending time looking at what's in front of them and they start putting effort into making the best from that and they get better shots.
Oh, yeah.
But they panic. It's amazing. It's like an incessant panic, like the rear screen. I can't see the rear screen. Wow, what am I going to do?
Right. Yeah, I do that anytime somebody joins my studio, usually a third shooter, once or twice you come out with me and you have the opportunity to just take all the photos you want. Let's see what you got. We go over them. And then comes the point when if you're doing the trial to be a second shooter, I do the same thing. I tape over your screen and I still expect well-exposed photos because, you know, you walk into a reception hall. It's just like that other reception hall.
Yeah.
What were your settings then? Do you remember? Now you do this also. You do these big, I mean, you showed me some of the shoots and I don't think I ever put it into my mind just what a production it can be. You, for example, flew to Paris to look at a prototype car.
Yeah, the Peugeot.
Yeah, which they wouldn't send you a photo, so you had to fly there for the day, take a look.
Yeah, you have to because it's like there's no NDA in the world that you're going to be able to sign.
Right.
I mean, you have to sign several, but they're not going to release it to anywhere. It doesn't even leave the room that it's built in. You know, it's a prototype. It's a big thing for guys like that.
Even then you showed the photo in their factory while it's being driven outside. It's still under wraps in case somebody's photographing from up above.
Yeah, so. Because it's France and it's Paris and you've got high-rise flats near their design center and you don't know that somebody's not on the balcony of a high-rise with an iPhone and they see it drive out the back of a truck transporter into the studio, so they take a quick picture of it and then it ends up on Twitter and then it gets leaked and you know, so it's really secure.
And so how did you get to the level of being the prototype photographer for is there any others that you, I mean, I saw you've done quite a few cars that are out there. They're all like higher end luxury. I've seen you do yachts as well. That's quite, it's not just the level of attainment that you have to get there, but it's the challenge that you face every single day. In terms of having to deliver, because these people are hiring you because they've looked at your previous work. So how are you working with the pressure of the situation, and how did you get there in the first place?
You basically, I mean, the short answer to that basically is that you develop a technical ability. You've got to develop a technical ability. If you're working as a professional commercial photographer, you're a professional commercial photographer. You shouldn't be trying to work hard to be a really good photographer. You should be a good photographer. If you're going to get aim to get paid that amount of money for a shoot, you should have attained that level. The thing that you need to evolve and work on is your style, and your style needs to be pretty much unique to you, because that is basically your brand. Your brand is your style, and your style is your brand. And the only thing that you're really going to get commissioned on is your style. So if they need, if Peugeot want to do this prototype and they need a guy to shoot it, I mean, I even asked them when they flew me to Paris, is there any particular reason why you picked me? And the direct answer was, it's the light, it's the way you light is exactly what we want for this. It's not a, you seem like the best guy for it because you can take good pictures. There's plenty of people in the world who can do what
right,
I can do,
right.
You know, technically capable. It's the style they're looking for. It's like music. It's like, you own a restaurant, you've got something important going on, you need a band. You could pick anyone from AC/DC through to, you know, some right. classical concert.
Yeah, who do you want to play at your wedding?
They're all capable of playing music.
Right.
You need to pick the right style for the
right.
for the venue. Do you see what I mean? It's a
right.
similar sort of thing.
Yeah, I have a, you know, if you want to host a cocktail hour at your
yeah.
wedding, maybe AC/DC is not
yeah,
the best.
Exactly.
At all.
So, joking aside, it is a similar thing. And the same as you need to specialize in an area. So you really, really become really astutely knowledgeable about that and good at it. It's like sometimes I say to guys in the class, you know, can you name a famous landscape photographer? Yeah, of course. Can you name a famous portrait guy? Yeah, of course.
Right.
Can you name somebody world famous for doing a bit of everything? Not really, no.
Right.
You know, if you want to make it big.
Richard Branson.
And you want to do
a little bit
you want to do the big bucks, then you need to specialize, but you
yeah.
need to commit. It's a lot of hard work.
Right.
It puts some people off. And that's great because
yeah.
it minimizes the competition for everybody else. If
sure.
you're there, then you've had a hard struggle to get there, and that shows you're committed.
Yeah. And you now, so you do this and you're producing some of the most amazing work that I've seen in the transport market. In fact, I've been asked to shoot a charter boat here in Chicago in the next month or two.
Ah, so that's why you asked me yesterday
asked
about the lighting. Yeah.
How would you do that?
How would you do that, then?
I don't think you're losing out on that one. I don't think that would fly you in on for that one. But no, it's like I have some ideas, and it's definitely like work from the get-go. But it's a lot of preparation. How much time are you spending preparing for the shoots yourself or your crew?
It depends on the shoot. It depends if there's a production company behind it. Like the Peugeot shoot, there was probably emails flying backwards and forwards for about 4 months. The equipment list for that shoot was about 12 pages. Each page had about 25 items on it.
And when did you know the style and the look that you were going for? Like when did...
2 months before.
2 months before. So you had it
because
sort of
you can't
up.
You can't do the equipment list that's required until you know what's needed.
I gotcha.
It's like the whole adage that I talk about. People talk about quotes and things like that for clients. People say, you know, I've had an email from somebody saying, we need some pictures of this. How much will it cost?
Right.
You know. And people say, well, how have you dealt with that? Well, I thought I'd go in low to try and get the gig, so I've put in like $1,000, or I thought he might put in $1,000, so I've put in $800, hopefully I'll get the gig. It's like, what are you thinking about? That's the same as getting in a cab and saying, hi, how much?
Right.
And the cab driver's going to be like, $50, take me to Mexico.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? The proper thing to do is to get back to these people and say, well, what is it you need? Where is it? You know, you need to ask the right questions and everything else.
And what it takes for you to sustain your business at the end of the day.
Yeah, so shoots like that, when you're saying how much goes into it, it's not just the equipment, the location, the visuals of what's required and everything else. There's everything else that goes into it, like the usage. What's the usage going to be? Because that affects
right.
it.
So how much you're going to charge for that, it really, it all comes out right at the end. That's why when I'm trying to explain to people about big shoots and they think that you're chosen based on cost, you're not. You go through months of logistics and planning and agreements and style and creative meetings, and it's not really till the very end that they go, right, let's just get the bottom budgets and sort that out.
Right.
It's not money-based. Not no. money-based at all. But when you think about it, a Peugeot prototype, it doesn't cost like $1 million. You're talking about multiple millions. So if you cost them $60,000, $80,000 for 4 days, it's nothing. They probably paid more than that for the windscreen.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
It depends on the client that's asking, too. I've learned there's mom-and-pop shops that say how much for you to come in and photograph for like flowers. Yeah,
but it's like the business classes I do. I mean, a lot of people get hung up on this. And then they do the business class and it sort of rings, and it lights a bulb in their head, if you like, where I talk about the different levels of business, the local, regional business, national business, and then international business. And you need to approach them all differently. So the guy locally, he wants you to do some work for him. He probably doesn't even know what usage is.
Right.
You know? So you've got to approach it differently.
I don't know. I want it.
So, yeah, you need to know which bit of the market you're aiming for, and then you can approach it in the right way.
Can you do both? Can you have that local guy? Can you take on that $800 shoot for the day?
You can, yeah. You can do it, but you need to be able to identify how to approach each one.
How do you keep your
It's like you've got an Audi dealership. Say you've got an Audi dealership. You've got the guy that comes in to buy the brand new Q7, fully loaded with all the optional extras, yeah? A good car sales guy will be able to read that guy coming through the door, and he'll even know that he wants a Q7 or a 5. He'll see some other young pup come through the door and think he's probably an S5 merchant. Do you know what I mean? He can read it. And then you get somebody else coming through the door, and they're after a 8-year-old second-hand A4.
Right.
You deal with it differently.
Right.
It's the same sort of thing. It's identifying. It's knowing it.
Right.
It's knowing how to approach it, but it's being able to recognize it in the first place.
And know your client.
And that comes through experience. That comes through riding the bike.
And the tough thing is that I see, you know, I'm a member of these random Facebook groups, and I'll see people come in and post, and it's like, hey, somebody's asking me for the shoot. How much should I bill for that?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. What are your costs for the day? How much do you want to make? What's your time worth? Like, start with that, and something like that.
So. It's the same as when people say, I'm really keen to get this client, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to do the first couple of shoots for free.
Right.
And that'll obviously hook the client in. Not from the whole concept, from a business point of view, that what you're saying is, look, I'll go and do these two shoots for you, and I don't value my time or my work at all. In fact, I'll do it for free.
Right.
And on the third shoot, I'm going to say, look, I'm going to do exactly the same thing for you that I did the first two times, but could you pay me?
Right.
Because it's now worth this magically.
Right. Yeah. No, that's the thing that we always face in our industry. Honestly, I think I have a feeling that if you're still around tonight, right? I think I'm going to be having drinks with you wherever, whichever corner you're at, and be asking you a ton more questions. But I know you've got a busy schedule, so I want to let you get back to your
great. Class. No, it's fine. That's great. Good to talk to you.
Tim Wallace, you are from, I'm not sure where you're from now. You're from Terminal 5 at the airport.
Well, when I left, I was from the United Kingdom and sometime known as Great Britain. And then things have all changed since I've been away. So,
voted to Brexit.
The Tom Hanks film, Terminal.
The Terminal.
This could be me on Monday. Where's the crackers?
Medicine is forgotten. So, well, I wish you the best of luck getting into the country. I'm sure you'll be fine. Although, I guess it's known here in the States, or everybody's calling it the Brexit, I believe.
Yeah. Going straight back to the UK. I go via the Southern Ireland first.
You do. Tell me about, if people want to get in touch with you, they want to follow you around the world. You do workshops in many places. I think you were in Dubai earlier.
This year I've done quite a few. This year I've done Dubai. Obviously, we're doing this. And I do Vegas next year with Photoshop World. It's quite a heavy year from a workshop point of view for me. Normally, I only do one, if I'm honest, one or two.
Okay.
How
long is the workshop?
The Photoshop World.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. You did, what was it? You did something in Dubai, right?
Oh, Dubai was the GPP event, which is a really good event. Okay. And we may be doing that next year. We're trying to work that out at the moment. But generally, if people want to find out more about me, go to the website, which is ambientlife.co.uk. If you have problems spelling that for any reason, just put my name, Tim Wallace, W-A-L-L-A-C-E, into Google. You'll find me really easily.
Yeah.
Facebook, it's easy to find me. Twitter, it's easy to find me. Slightly controversial. I say what I like. So I do swear sometimes and post funny.
You kept this relatively a clean podcast. I was expecting you gave.
Yeah.
It was like, what, 30 minutes into class that you showed us the middle finger.
I know, yeah.
So this was definitely more on the tame side, but.
I'm just trying to be professional. Just right. In case I can't get back to the UK and then I'm going to have to just to go and come it back in.
Yeah,
please let me back in.
Yeah, they'll hear the podcast. They'll be like, we don't want it.
And I'll be, this time next month, I'll be living down the south side.
There you go. Well, you jog through. So Tim Wallace, thank you so much for your time. It's been awesome having you here. I love the workshop. And definitely, if I have the opportunity, I'm coming to one of your like longer workshops, hopefully.
Okay. You're welcome.
Thanks again. Take care.